Welcome, geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new episode of Geek to Me Radio. Tonight, we have voice actor Amber Jones on. She's going to be talking about a new documentary called Bill Scott, The Portrait of Moose. We'll talk about some of her other work as well. Later, we'll have my interview with Emmy Award-winning artist Chuck Patton. All that and more, stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games.
If you're driving around the greater St. Louis area tonight listening to us on the big 550 KTRS, hello to all of you out there in the St. Louis area. We appreciate you finding us on this blustery Sunday evening. If you're streaming us on YouTube and on Facebook, hello to all of you there. Thank you for finding us and watching with the video. We appreciate that. And of course, if you're hearing us after the fact in the podcast form on whatever platform you may be getting your podcasts, streaming them, we appreciate you finding us there and subscribing. Hopefully you subscribed. If not, go ahead and click that button to subscribe, especially on YouTube. If you would hit the subscribe button on YouTube, we appreciate that. We're trying to boost our subscription numbers up there. And I know it always makes Joey happy when we boost our subscription numbers. See, look at that smile. You can't see it. I'll show you later. We've got a full show tonight, so we're going to jump right in. My first guest is a voice actor. She has a documentary called Bill Scott, The Portrait of a Moose, which I thoroughly enjoyed this because we always talk about Gene Foray, but we very rarely, I talk about Bill Scott, and it was amazing to see all the depth of research. We have Amber Jones. How are you?
Hi, James. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good. Thank you, because it's like wee small hours of the morning where you are you're in Chester, is that correct? Chester, UK?
Yes, that's right. It's 3 o'clock in the morning right now.
Goodness. Hopefully you're a night owl or you've had some strong coffee, one of the two.
I'm always awake at this hour.
Okay. Good to know. Well, I appreciate the time. Talk a little bit first, because you love voiceover, because I know on your YouTube channel, you've interviewed a lot of the same people I have. You've had Susan Eisenberg, you've had Phil Lamar, and a lot of things like that. Talk a little bit about not only how you got into voice acting yourself, but also about your channel.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll start with my channel as it came first. I started in 2014. I was only 10. You know, I would upload these silly little camera videos. I would shoot on my little old Sony iPhone thingy. And it just kind of snowballed from there. I started vlogging, and then I got into filming these coin-operated children's rides. You know, you see them at malls and outside supermarkets and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that was really what got me my big break on YouTube, and then just like, it's the fact that I'm on the autism spectrum. There's people like me out there who are into these rides, and a lot of people don't know why. So people have been kind of like finding this out and stuff. And, you know, I've done interviews for radio and in a gaming magazine for America, just, you know, discussing about this topic. And it was absolutely amazing. I mean, it was just phenomenal. It was just something you never thought people would discuss about. And then, of course, I got into voiceover when I was about 14 or 15. I got into all the old cartoons, you know, like Disney Afternoon and the Jay Ward cartoons. And that's what really sparked, you know, what I wanted to do when I'm older. Look, I want to do voices for cartoons. And so I started researching all these people, and I was like, look, these guys are so interesting. Like, I just want to be like them. I want to fly out to America and meet these guys. And it is happening in March. I am flying out to Los Angeles for a week. So I got my first job when I was 15, voicing a coin operated ride.
But still, I mean, yeah.
And then, Yeah, and then I got my second big break was still is because it's not been released. A theme park ride that is in California that is being opened in a few years' time. Yeah,
very cool. And I know one of the big influences in your voice acting has been Frank Welker. And if I from what you've told me, you've actually developed a friendship with him and everything like that. So, I know Frank is going to be at the big Transformers convention in LA and Burbank in March. Are you planning to attend that one?
Yes, but he doesn't know I'm going, so no one tell him. Don't tell him that I'll be there. I love a surprise. I literally have this to surprise him.
Nice.
Listening in. It's a sound wave.
It's gorgeous. Wow, that's really cool.
I love it. Yeah, my friend from LA brought this over for me, and it was like, oh my gosh, I couldn't find it anywhere apart from Imagine Solve in America, so I could get my friend to bring it over. But yeah, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see Frank again. I literally just watched an Emmys live stream. Peter Cullen was getting a Lifetime Achievement Award, and Frank was presenting it on stage to him. This was only about half an hour ago, and oh my goodness, it was just, it brought tears to my eyes because it's just like two extraordinary men on stage, just like, oh my gosh, they're just so amazing. And they're like, oh my gosh.
I know. I'm gonna have to screen capture this and zoom in to check it out because there's all this up there. And my eyes are old, so I'm trying to see them all. But yeah, that's amazing. I know, because when I usually go, if I see these people, I've got action figures or something like that, I'll have them sign. And so I've got the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends Marvel Legends set with Firestar, Spider-Man, and Iceman. And Frank's the only signature I'm missing on that. So I've got to get Frank to sign for Iceman. So.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So do you travel very often then for these kind of things? Or is this special because it's Frank?
Well, I very often go to comic cons. I go to Liverpool, London, Telford, you know, all these different places. And it's mainly for the voice actors. So I've met different people. It's very rare that they come over to the UK, so obviously like the flight costs and stuff. But I have managed to obviously meet Kevin Conroy, Rob Paulson, Frank, of course, Tara Strong, Grey Delisle, everyone like that. So this TFCon LA that I'm going to in March is my first time going to an American con. And to America all together. So,
okay.
I'm excited.
I mean, and we've talked about in the show the lineup of talent, because they've got Dan Gilvezan, Frank Welker, Peter Cullen, John Machida Jr., Paul Eiding, Sue Blue's going to be there. A huge, huge lineup for the 40th anniversary of the Transformers, which you're too young to know that show. That's my show. I'm old. I remember watching it as a little kid coming home from grade school to see this show. And it's one of my very favorites, top four or five cartoon shows ever. And so I'm very excited. And it's great for me to see someone young like you appreciating it for the voice acting skill and everything like that, too.
Yeah, definitely. I literally have the box set up there and just, you know, you want to see all these people who, you know, I don't think will ever make it back to the UK. So they've done, like, you know, Auto Assembly and TF Nation, but obviously a good few years ago. So I only got into Transformers about 5 years ago. So yeah, it'd be just nice to see all these people. A lot of them know me from my show. So thing is, they all know I'm going. Frank doesn't know I'm going. So I'm just going to thing there. And the funny thing is, I don't really tell someone who I am until they recognize my voice. When I met Sue Blue, I was like, oh, hi, Sue. And then she's like, oh my God, you're Amber. And I'm like, yes, what? Oh, yes, Amber, I recognize you. It's just so great. And just to see all these people in person, it just means so much to 14-year-old me who thought, I'm probably never going to be as big as these people. I'm probably never going to get the flight to America. It's too expensive and everything. And it's finally happening. Like, cool, here's later. I'm so excited.
And the documentary, I want to make sure we talk about that because it's fascinating me. You've got this documentary and you did all these interviews yourself because you've got Billy West, you've got Tara Strong, you've got all these interviews in the documentary talking about Bill Scott. Where did the idea for making this documentary come about?
Well, it came about, James, from the fact that Bill has nothing official to cover his work. You know, June Frey, she got an autobiography, she got a documentary. You know, George Butler got a documentary, Paul Frees, Hans Conry, these guys, they all got their own story. They all never got anything.
So weird.
Until now. There was nothing ever released about Bill. And I was like, look, I've got to I've obviously admired Bill since I was 14. Obviously, cartoons saved me from a very dark place. So I, you know, owe my life to pretty much all these animated characters. So I was like, look, I'm going to make a fan-made video all about all the voices that he's done, the many voices of Bill Scott or something like that. And then I reached out to his family, who then gave me their blessing, his son and his daughter. And they were just so sweet about it. And we are planning to meet. I'm planning to meet his son when I fly over there, because I think his daughter's in San Francisco, so it's too far for her to travel. But yeah, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to try and reach out to all these people. And this was during COVID, so this was like sort of the first part of 2020. So I started talking to these people. So I started out with the Gummy Bears people, you know, Katie Lee, Morale North, Will Ryan, freaking Corey Burton I managed to get, and he's known for being a private person, and we spent a good 6 hours chatting about our lives and stuff, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm getting all these people. And then these interviews then continued, you know, throughout the year, and then I sorted them out, I was typing the script, and the biggest one I probably got to talk to, the biggest person, was probably Weird Al Yankovic.
I saw that too, that was impressive. Yeah.
Wow. I was like, look, I'm a big Weird Al fan. I was like, oh, I'll reach out to him. He's in the Rocking Bullwinkle reboot. It'd be nice to talk to him, you know, about maybe the legacy and stuff. And then he goes, I actually met Bill. I'm like, what now? He's like, yeah, I met Bill, you know, when he did his George of the Jungle cover. He was like, don't reuse the yells. He actually brought Bill in a few months before he died to re-record the yells used on the theme song.
Yeah.
So this is like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like pure chance. And then all these other people, like Frank Welker, I couldn't get to do an interview with him, but he sent me like this really big email of all the things that he did with Bill Scott, and it's just, I had to put it all together. And then I had a massive premiere of it on Zoom in 2021. There was at least a good 20 or something industry folk there, just all gathered here. Jay Ward's granddaughter, Amber Ward, she was there. And it was just all so amazing. And it was just, wow. It was a wonderful night. And it's my baby. It's my pandemic baby. I did it throughout the pandemic, and you know, it's 2 hours long, and I wouldn't have it any more or any less.
And for those of you who are listening right now, if you're listening to this show after the fact in the podcast form, scroll down to the bottom of the page. We have a link to Amber's channel where you can check out the documentary in a show notes there. So just scroll down and you'll be able to see that. And if you're listening to it currently, wait for this show to come online and you'll find it in the show notes as well. Weird Al, because I'm a fan too of Milo Murphy's Law, which is a much newer cartoon, but the writing is so clever, and he voices obviously the main character, Milo Murphy. But it's just bad things continue to happen to this guy. So it's kind of like Murphy's Law meets Forrest Gump, because it's a charming show and it's probably one of the better written shows that are out there, because a lot of the animation now, in my opinion, and I'm an old guy saying, hey, get off my lawn, you kids, but a lot of the stuff now isn't up to the stuff of like the Looney Tunes, and it's not, there's a lot of stuff to sort through, but there are some gems like Milo Murphy's Law, Gravity Falls, things like that. Are there any animations that you're currently a fan of, like current stuff?
Not really, to be fair. All my stuff is based in the past, and it's just like really different, like, you know, Rocky and Bullwinkle, Batman the Animated Series, and Simpsons. Well, I mean, Simpsons is in the present, but I prefer OG Simpsons.
Yeah, it's kind of, the Simpsons just hasn't stopped. You look back in 1988 and be like, oh, we're still watching the Simpsons. That's kind of interesting. And all the stuff they predicted along the way has come true now, so it's kind of eerie. Oh, yeah. The Simpsons won't ever go away. We don't know. But if you're just now tuning in, we're talking with voice actor Amber Jones. Are you okay to stick with me for a quick commercial break?
Of course.
All right. We are going to take that quick break right now. We're going to come back in just a moment. We'll talk more with Amber. If you've got any questions, I know in the chats, I've been neglecting the chats. We have our friend Chance from Atlanta. Says, happy holidays. Hi from Atlanta. Hello, Chance. And Chance is also impressed that Amber got to talk to Weird Al. I'm a little jealous myself. We're going to talk more with Amber right after this. You can send your text to us at 84126 or in the chats, and we'll read those on air. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
We are back. Geek to Me Radio heard live here on the Big 550 every 550. I can't even talk. 5:50 a.m. every Sunday night, 9 o'clock, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific for those of you on the coast, or 3 a.m. if you're in the UK, like our friend Amber. We'll make sure we tell you about our comic book sponsor, Bugs Comics and Games. If you're anywhere in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, make sure to head out to O'Fallon, Missouri. They're right there, easily accessible from off of Highway 70 or the Page Extension right there along Bryan Road. I'm drawing a map for any of you who aren't listening. You can see me, but the video, it makes sense to you, doesn't it? Bugs Comics, he's just celebrated his 2-year anniversary with his brick and mortar store, but I went to him when I was a kid. I used to ride my bike up to him before I had my license for my car. So he's been in business. This is just his 4th location, I guess, that he's moved to over the years. Took some time off to do some professing at Lindenwood, and now he's back in the comic book game, and I'm glad he is. It makes me happy. We were just talking about The Simpsons, watching that 30 years, 40 years later, and here I am 30 years later still going to Bugs Comics and Games for my weekly comics. He can be your new online comic book shop or your new local comic book shop. Maybe you're not in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area. You can go to Instagram. Check him out. Bugs Comics and Games on Instagram. You can find him there. If you, he'll put comics up and you can just say claim. If you want the comic, he'll ship it to you. You don't have to be in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area. It's very simple. But if you are, go in, because I like to browse the back issues. You can get a pull list going for your new comics, so you never miss a new issue of Moon Knight that's out by our friend David Pipo, City of the Dead, or the new Spider-Man from John Romita Jr. That's got those great covers on there, or any of the other comics that are out now. The Batman run, Detective Comics, Wonder Woman, whatever it is you're into, Larry's got it. And if he doesn't have it, ask him. He'll do a special order to make sure he has the comics for your pull list. And if you join the Avengers Club, you automatically start saving on your weekly comics. So don't forsake your hobby just because the economy is a little turmoily right now. Keep your hobby going. Join the Avengers Club. Save on your new issues, your back issues, your toys, your games, your bags, your boards, all that stuff. And do it from a guy who knows the business. Larry knows what he's talking about. He will make sure that he keeps you informed. And it's like having your own personal comic concierge. I can't tell you how many times I've gone in the store and there'll be a guy will come in with his kid, or a woman will bring her child in and say, hey, we're looking for comics. He just saw this new movie. He wants to get into this comic, and Larry will show you exactly where to go and exactly what it is you will want. So make sure you check him out. Bugs Comics and Games on Facebook. Give that page a like. And of course, like we said, follow him on Instagram, Bugs Comics and Games there. And he is the best source for your comic books every week. Bugs Comics and Games, very proud to have him as the official sponsor here on Geek to Me Radio. Before we took that last break, we were chatting with Amber Jones about her documentary, Bill Scott, The Portrait of a Moose, and she just now informs me it's only part one, so there's a part two coming out. What else do you have up your sleeve for part two?
It's really just, really stuff I did not elaborate on in the last part, so I didn't really talk about. There was a rock and roll and cool record that was released in the early 60s that had like exclusive songs and stuff sung by June and Bill, and also just other stuff about his work in the 80s. He did a short called Marina Man, which was produced by which was produced by Simpsons director David Silverman, so he spoke to me about that, and Bill was put one of the voices on that, and it's just all these little bits of information that I completely forgot from the last part, and it's just something, well, I thought I'd start off 2024 with.
And so it's interesting because this is obviously a big passion project. I mean, you took a lot of your time to produce this, and it's incredibly professional. It looks like something you'd see on a Netflix documentary show or something like that. So do you have plans to do other ones, or is this kind of like, no, Bill Scott's my guy and I'm only doing this for Bill Scott and to give his memory a boost out there and get it into the world?
Well, I'll tell you what, James, I actually was considering, and my dad did back me up with this one, I was actually going to do a Frank Welker one at one point. I did reach out to multiple people, you know, a lot of voice actors. I reached out to Howie Mandel as well, because we worked with Frank and Gremlins. Yeah, but then a lot of them said, okay, but does Frank know that you're doing this? I will only work on this documentary if Frank has given you permission to make it. So what I had to do was I had to email his agent And Frank sent me this lovely email back saying, like, he's flattered, but he's like, I would like to ask you to not proceed and stuff like that. But he was just really humble about it. And that's what makes him Frank.
Yeah.
He's unique. He's humble. Oh my gosh, like, I'm just so grateful. Like, I class him as a friend. It's wild.
Yeah. I mean, just like I said, we had Greg Berger on the show. Gosh, it's been a while now since we had him on, but we were talking and I said, what's it like when you're in the Sunbow Studios and you're sitting around with Catman Struthers as the voice of Jazz and you've got, you know, Peter Cullen and Frank Welker? And Greg said the coolest thing was when Frank Welker would walk over and he would make this sound, he just goes up to a blank wall, starts making the noise of quarters going into a payphone, picking up the doing the dial tone, doing the voice of the operator, doing the voice of the connection. He does it all with his voice. He was probably one of the most prolific voice actors and super talented. I mean, he does, like, if you look at his IMDb, you know, all the stuff he does, animal noises, just he's listed as uncredited sometimes, but boy, the guy's talent is just boundless.
I spoke to someone the other day and they said they know Frank personally, like, as in family wise, and they were at a 4th of July celebration with him. And when they went to the cooler, Frank actually imitated the sound of shaking a can and then opening it, and it's fizzy drink, you know, going everywhere, like a fizzy can exploding. And it's just like, you're thinking, wow, he's just crazy, like, in his private life as well. He's like, it's not all the laughter that he just puts on. He's a wild person. I love it, man.
And it's so exciting. Looks like we'll both get to meet him again. I met him once in.
Are you going?
No, I had to go. I had to go. I'm cutting way back on my conventions this year, but this one I had half their lineup on my show already. So I wanted to meet them in person, but I saw Frank Welker in Dallas, but I need to meet him again so I can get that Iceman signature. And then, you know, I can die happy. But so we'll get to hang out in Burbank, it sounds like. That'll be great.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. You'll get to see my bag.
Yes, the Soundwave bag. It's amazing.
Soundwave bag.
For those of you, hopefully you've got video, folks, because it's a really cool bag. If not, I'm sure we'll take pictures in Burbank. That's fine.
Yeah.
But if people are listening right now and they want to find out more about you, if they want to dig into your stuff, if they want to see the video, website handles, social media stuff, things like that, where can people find you?
On Twitter, you can find me, X, or whatever you call it nowadays. You can find me at Amberleer X, which is obviously my first name, A-M-B-E-R, and my middle name, L-E-A-H, with another H and an X on the end. And that's the same for my Instagram as well. My YouTube is at Amber the Fangirl, which is one word. My screen name is now just Amber Jones because that's what I prefer to go by when I'm doing voiceover. And my Facebook is private. So I suppose you can find me, Amber Jones. I don't mind, but yeah, that's where you can find me on the net. And I'm on TikTok as well, under the name AmberleahX. So that's my main screen name first.
TikTok. Well, you're braver than I am. I haven't ventured to TikTok. It's one more platform to try to do, and I feel exhausted as it is. But it's so great to talk to you, Amber. Thank you very much for your time. You're early morning for you over there in the UK, but we do appreciate it, and I'll look forward to seeing you in March.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you too. Just a quick answer to the question in the chat. Any favorite superhero?
Oh, Batman. Thank you. Yes, Chance. So what's your favorite?
Batman.
Same with me. Yeah, I know we both had that terrible feeling when Kevin Conroy passed away. It was just awful.
I never got in for my show. I was that close.
See, yeah, it's one of those. That's why I always feel whenever someone passes and I haven't had a chance to talk to them, that's why I try to do as many of these conventions as I can to get those interviews and get that connection. But so Chance, thank you for the question. And Joe Sturdy says, Godzilla Minus One, best Godzilla movie ever. I haven't seen it yet, Joe. Don't rub it in, okay? Hopefully check it out soon. But Amber, thanks very much for your time, and we'll talk to you very soon. Have a good rest of your day.
You're welcome. You too, James. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Be well. There she goes, bye. Amber Jones. If you get a chance to check the documentary out, folks, well, like I said, we've got a link in the show notes. Scroll down there and you'll be able to check that out. If you're a fan of voice acting, a lot of voice actors show up, a lot of great people show up, and it's Bill Scott, The Portrait of a Moose. So find that on YouTube. We're going to take another quick commercial break. We're going to come right back in just a moment, and we'll have my interview with Emmy Award-winning artist Chuck Patton, talking about a lot of the stuff he's done. Very cool guy, and I'm thrilled that I got a chance to talk to him. You'll hear that interview coming up next. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
Hello, this is Jim Cummings, and this is Hondo Nagar. Don't move an inch. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio, and I will be checking on you.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Jim Zanzal. Geek to Me Radio, heard here on the Big 550 KTRS every Sunday night. Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. DiscoverStCharles.com is the website. We were just out there all weekend long celebrating Christmas traditions. One weekend left. If you've not come out to St. Charles yet and you're anywhere near St. Charles, anywhere from Kansas City to Little Rock, all the way over to Chicago, head on out to St. Charles next weekend. We got Wednesday night. We have Wednesday night. You can do the Christmas Carol walkthrough. You actually get to interact with all the people like Ebenezer Scrooge and Tiny Tim, Bob Cratchit. You get to see a young Scrooge breaking off his engagement to Belle. The Fezziwigs are there who throw the big parties when young Scrooge was working as their clerk. A lot of fun is to be had. You literally walk through a Charles Dickens story. It's gorgeous. It's wonderful. They got the three ghosts are there. It's great. Friday nights, Krampusnacht. You get to go down to the train depot and get your picture taken with Krampus, interact with the Kali Kanseroi, Grilla, and all her mystical friends who hang out there. It's a lot of fun. You get to play some carnival games like Toss the Baby to the Ogre. Cool stuff. Trust me, it's a lot of fun. The kids love it. So bring your little ones to get a picture with Krampus. A little bit different from your pictures with Santa, and everyone seems to enjoy that also. And of course, then Saturday and Sunday, they'll do their regular Christmas traditions where you get to walk around, talk to international gift givers like Father Christmas, Père Noël, La Befana, Santa Lucia, and all their friends. Groups of carolers singing period songs and period costumes. It's a lot of fun and a great way to ramp up that last week. If you're starting to lag in the Christmas energy, head on out there. It will be a great time. So bypass the mall, go shop small businesses, which is what St. Charles, that downtown area, is made up of, and have a great, great time. Get yourself some roasted chestnuts and some wassail and bask in the glory of the holidays. Check it out, Christmas traditions. You can go to the website, DiscoverStCharles.com. That's DiscoverStCharles.com. As we always say, it's an historically good time. We've got my interview with Emmy Award-winning artist Chuck Patton up next. I did this interview last year, and I thought I lost the interview, and I was going through files trying to put together the Justice League podcast that Susan Eisenberg and I do, and I came across something labeled Chuck Patton Unedited, and I opened it up, and there was. So, from a year ago, but nevertheless, still a great interview, here we go. Talking with Chuck Patton about his career, we are here at the, I think this is only the second ever ToonCon in Pasadena, if I'm not mistaken, so thanks for coming out to this event.
Thank you, I'm glad to be here.
So, writer, director, you've done art, so much stuff that you've done. Do you have, like, when you're working, what do you kind of view as your main hat? What do you think of yourself? Like, producer, what do you think you do best, or how do you introduce yourself to people?
Okay. I would make a bad joke, like I always call myself a garbage collector. Okay. But the truth is that has enabled me to be, to answer that question for you. Bottom line, I'm a storyteller. I've been a storyteller since I became a professional. I was a storyteller before, which led me to become a professional. Comics was always my world, my passion. Television, movies was also my passion, and I was lucky to use that to become, to get an animation. I'm not an animator. I've never animated in my life. I've told animators how to animate. But I'm not an animator. I'm not in love with the process of how to do it. I just love the end result. And that's what I focused on. And the end result was to tell a story.
And working on the Justice League when they moved to Detroit, Jerry Conway. We just interviewed Jerry Conway. Just had him on the show a couple weeks back for Terrificon. And his run on Justice League, your run on Justice League, gave us Gypsy and Vibe and all these characters you co-created. You've seen them come to life either in animated form or obviously on The Flash. We got Cisco Ramon. What are your thoughts when you see them in live action or animation?
It tickles the hell out of me now. Jerry and I reunited a couple years ago at a con, where I got to say a lot of things I wasn't able to say at the time, which, one, most importantly, thank you, and two, who'd have ever thought 20 years, 30 years later, we see these guys live? That cracks me up, because for the longest time, I thought it was a failure. For the longest time, I thought that it was misthought, misconstrued on my side as much as his. And to see that, despite all that, we touched fans. I've had fans come up to me. In fact, I wouldn't have been coming to these cons or weren't for the fans telling me how much they wanted to see me, wanted to see our work, and applaud our work and loved it. And I, out of gratitude, we revisited, and now I thank it. I'm grateful for those things. It's great to see Vibe. I loved Vibe on Flash.
Yeah.
He was wonderful. I wish we had wrote him that way originally. Even the whole dancing part, I used to despise that, and yet I did a animated short where we played that up, specifically because we knew we can do it in animation.
Yeah, yeah.
And that made me also fall in love again with the character, because I got to see what we weren't able to do the first time, which was have some fun. Honestly, have fun. So whenever I see him show up, it's fun.
And we think of Vix, and I always think of the Justice League Unlimited. Yeah. That was a great turn with that character. Her own series on the CW Seed. Yeah. I mean, that's got to be surreal to think this is a character I co-created, is now getting all this love you're seeing in all these different forms. That's so cool.
Yeah. Well, again, the weird thing about Vixen, as much as I want to take credit for, I didn't. I mean, Bob Ostner was the original artist on it. And as much as I make fun of the color scheme, the general design of Vixen was his. And she was beautiful. And it was a great idea of a character, which is why I'm glad I got to participate in bringing her back. The one thing I will take credit was to really bring in her urban African roots. And the urban roots being, again, we know she was going to be an urban superhero.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to bring in a mythology of her African powers. And so the color scheme reflected that. Her hair also really make it dynamic as well as savage. And, guys, I sound like Stan Lee for a second.
That's a good impression.
Thank you. Thank you. But that was the part that I feel like I was her... Because I do not or ever want to take Bob's credit from her. But I was definitely a caretaker.
Stepfather?
Stepfather, stepbrother.
Okay, there you go.
I like to say, I was stepbrother. I was stepbrother. But that was the cool part. Because Jerry helped me see how fun she was. And that was the one who was saying, hey, let's really blow this up with her. Because I don't think that... And to be fair to Bob, that wasn't his will base. Yeah. That wasn't his culture. He probably saw it as, you know, he was creating a superhero one. I knew we were creating an icon. And it was from my neck of the woods. It was my cultural background. I wanted to see that rise. So I will, but again, I would not take credit over him as much as we share it. And I am, yeah, stepbrother. So I'm proud of her. I'm very proud of her.
And then when you get someone like Gina Torres doing the voice, I mean,
Wow, geez. You know, somebody even kind of pointed her out. I forgot who did it. A mutual friend of ours. I did a drawing of Gypsy of Vixen, and he pointed it out to her, and she was just glowing over it. And again, talking about prop. Now I became a proud papa. Now I'm a proud papa, and it wasn't even my design. I was doing the later design that someone else had done. I don't know if it was Crisscross or I can't remember who, but it was beautiful, and I loved it, and I still love it, and I love what they did with her on Justice League Unlimited. So, again, it's weird to say I can't feel like a papa, but I am. That's it. I'm a proud uncle.
Yeah, proud uncle. A stepbrother. Either one.
Stepbrother
makes you sound a little younger.
Yeah, thank you very much, because I feel old these days.
This is good. And I was going to look at all... I mean, I had to write some of this down, because there's so many projects you were involved in as writer for Double Dragon, the 2004 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. We mentioned Vixen. Young Justice, you had to write Cisco Ramon in that, right?
Well, here's the irony. I didn't write it, but what the irony was with Double Dragon, I was the director, supervising director, which meant I called the shots on everything. So I created the backstory and worked with the writers on creating the stories as well as the characters and all the backstories of theirs. So I was given co-writer credit,
though
I wasn't given co-writer money. So, although the WGA has been really kind to me, so that's
good.
Nice. As far as Young Justice, that was a nice gift that I had no idea I was giving credit for. Marv Wolfman included me as the creator of Oh, I forgot the name of the
Cisco
character.
Ramon, I think, was what it was listed.
Well, Cisco, with Cisco for sure, because I created his design. But as a writer, because that's a whole different thing, I was given credit for Dr. Charles. It was Cyborg's girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
And I created her for like a hot second in one of, it was a three-parter Teen Titans I did. And next thing I know, they gave me the credit as writer on it, sharing it with Marv. Bless Marv. I guess he was like, yeah, sure. You know, but I didn't write it. And I want to make that distinction because it's so important in our business. The directors and artists are never given as strong a credit as they should.
Yeah.
And the writers are given the lion's share of the creation, which is unfair. We share it. Mm-hmm. It's not like we're dominant over the other. On the other hand, it's the visual media. And we're the ones that give you the final visual of what's going on.
Right.
But we are co-creating. So I was a co-creator on it, but I wasn't the writer. I would make suggestions, even like with Cisco. What I told people about Vibe and how Jerry interpreted it, if you heard the conversation, it's two different things. It's very interesting. In the case of that character of Charles, Marv just told me she's a good-looking black woman who's genius, and she really gets on Vic's nerves, and you think they're not going to get along, but they're going to fall in love later. I wasn't even going to write, be a part of that, them falling in love later. So I just had to set them up.
Okay.
Great. I just made it look really chic, and that was my contribution. Thank you. I'll take it.
It's very Sam and Diane kind of relationship,
yeah.
It sounds like.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
That was at that time where that was probably the hottest thing. That and Moonlighting.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Was, that was the
Bruce Willis, Civil Shepherd. Oh.
Yeah, and I never had a relationship like that, so I got to be honest. I never saw it work, but that was part of that, yeah.
I think that those kind of relationships only really happen in Hollywood, I think.
Totally. Oh, totally. Here we are, back in Hollywood, yeah. But reality fakes reality, so... Yeah, but again, I'm grateful for giving the credit for that because I was in those rooms. I've done so much backstory creation on characters, all those shows you mentioned, some you haven't mentioned.
There's been a huge list, and I've gone through all of them. It's crazy.
It's scary to me, and I look at them like...
I picked out the ones I knew, so...
Captain Planet is one most people don't know. I was involved with that, and I was the guy who came up with the whole system of how the magic happened. And I was looking at Captain Marvel to do that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I was really influenced because the person who I was creating it for did not like comic books at all. So I used the mythological background to kind of sell the deal. And then only later she realized, you bastard, you snuck in comic books. And, well, he's called Captain Planet, for God's sakes. So anyway.
So you must have seen those memes go around where the kids have their ring and they'll say, totally. Netflix, Peacock, totally. With your powers combined, I am more expensive than cable and stuff like that.
Shit, absolutely. The biggest meme that no one knows is the actual saying of one of the characters. The original story was Mati. Mati raises his ring and goes, hard. Now, originally, the word was love. And I remember in the meeting, I cringed. And the producer's song went, why are you cringing? Why? And it goes, because kids do not run around screaming love.
Sure.
It's corny. Boys think it's corny. Girls know the boys think it's corny. Well, what? And it goes, I'm not saying they don't understand and accept it, but they go for the metaphor.
Yeah.
They like the symbol. They just don't want to hear it. That's why when your parents hug you, you go, I love you. Ah, I don't want to hear that.
They get the little side hug.
Right. Yeah. And the girls just do it, and the boys do the sound. That's how it works. You know, see, I come from a big family. I've seen this. So she went, heart? And it goes, that's it. Because a heart as a symbol can be powerful. It can be loving. It's a visual that you don't have to add more to. So that's how Mate got to say heart.
How about that?
And it became a running joke for us because we'd stop and go, heart, you know.
This is a story I never knew before. This is now why I like interviewing people like you who are the inside scoop.
And that was one of my major contributions besides the green mullet hair.
Okay.
On Captain Planet. There was a lot of other things, but those two things blasted in the show. So the mullet and the heart. So.
And then writer to director, like I said, I just had a few of these down, the ones I'm familiar with, but Swamp Thing, obviously, which never got to play with the other DC characters. It was always sad because of the copyrights on the thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
G.I. Joe, which was huge for me growing up.
Yep.
And I'm a Nintendo guy, so Captain N was a big thing.
Oh, Captain N.
We're going to come right back and talk more with Chuck Patton about Captain N, some of the other projects he did as well. Right after this quick commercial break, you're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
This is Matt King, the voice of Illidan Demon Hunter, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
We are back. Want to make sure we tell you about Kokomo Toys in Kokomo, Indiana, one of our partners who sent us all this cool stuff. You may have gotten a box of swag because you called in with one of the trivia questions. So we sent you some cool stuff from Kokomo Toys. If you have not been there before and you're driving anywhere remotely close to the state of Indiana, go check out Kokomo Toys in Kokomo, Indiana, aptly named because it's the city in which Kokomo Toys resides. And you can see all the cool stuff they've got. I mean, my goodness, the amount of toys, things you probably forgot about, you played with as a kid, they've got it. They've always got eBay sales going as well. So if you can't get there, follow them on social media, check out their website, and you can get the link to their eBay sales. They have a lot of cool stuff going on. They had a gorgeous G.I. Joe Skyfighter I wanted so bad, but it's a little out of my price range, so of course I had to let it go. But they've always got cool stuff going up there, and if you are in the market to get rid of some of your toys, you might want to give them a shout because they buy toy collections all the time. Kokomo Toys in Kokomo, Indiana. Check them out on social media. Super cool stuff they do on Instagram and on Twitter and on Facebook as well. I think they're on TikTok as well. So check them out there. Kokomo Toys, just like it sounds. Very proud to have partnered with them this year here on Geek to Me Radio. We were talking with Emmy Award winning artist Chuck Patton before we took that last break, and we'd asked him one of my cartoons that I remember growing up as a kid in the 80s was Captain N from the Nintendo world. Here's what he had to say about that show.
Captain N was weird because I came in on that as an artist with the original director who developed it. I was like his right-hand man. And so he kind of used me as an art director. We'll be here for hours if I explain the politics of what happened on that show. Suffice to say, I worked under him to help to get the show visualized. But I wasn't calling the shots. I had to kind of like interpret his stuff to the artists who they thought they were calling the shots. So I was like the lightning rod.
Unofficial. The artist whisperer.
Yeah. And because I was an artist, they listened, but they really hated that I, you know, had no title. Which was funny because during the second season, I got made into the director. Never directed before. But I was taught the boarding and designs through my boss, who created the show, and then I watched through the artist, which was an amazing show. Which was hilarious because we were basically taking the whole Nintendo game thing and bastardizing it. Basically doing what I was saying. It wasn't like it was important to follow the game. It was about telling the story.
Right.
Which I could do. We brought a lot of fun story bits and mythological bits to it that the game would just play over. And I enjoy working with the characters like Kid Icarus, who didn't have that kind of an identity. You know, Simon Belmont was a complete thing. Simon Belmont was more like Maxwell Smart, you know, in our show. and so the Simon Belmont you see in Castlevania now. We weren't allowed to go there because of standards and practices, too. Mm-hmm. So we had to bring this new aspect up. So I was coming in, and this was my rookie season of coming in as his second in command, but basically learning on the ropes how to put a show together. And for good or bad, I saw how it worked. And when I became director, that was harsh. I had to go in there and really learn what retakes meant and film and I owe it all to my editors. My editors were my teachers about how to deal with film language, how dialogue worked, where the music comes in, where the music goes out. Sometimes they would let me make mistakes so I would learn. And I would look at it later and go, oh, that was awful. And he goes, yeah, if we told you, you wouldn't have learned. You needed to fall down on this because, one, you weren't willing to listen. You were rushing. Now you need to take more time. And I realized then, right there, that your crew knows what they're doing. The producers are pushing to get things done. We had to get things done on time every week for the network. Often we failed and we faked it really well. But your crew knew. So I knew, listen to the crew. Listen to the production.
And I was just talking, Dan Reba, one of the directors from Batman the Animated Series and Justice League was talking, and he says editors never get the credit they're due because they're not. It's not the glamorous job, but they're the ones who really make the shows or the projects what they are.
What I love about the editors is they know their job, they know how to do it, and because of that, they know it's not important to put their face on the front. You get other people who are vying to constantly take the credit over the director. Yeah. I won't go into it because it would be too insulting to these people. But I've had wars with them where they tried to do that. Mm. Never with an editor. An editor knew his job, and he knew the strength of an editor is that you never knew he edited.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And that worked. And if they're really good, you got more work. And your work was applauded and you know, again, cuts. I used to hear that word. Now I know what that means. And
yeah.
My editor was a wonderful man, and he's passed on now. He was part of a brother-sister act, and their father was a live-action editor.
Oh, wow.
So they came from a family of editors. So
that's interesting.
And again, heard all these stories about how they worked with directors, and it taught me how to do this.
I never knew there was an editing gene, but it sounds like their family had one.
They definitely had one. And if I told you their background, the stuff they worked on, you'd go, oh my God. You know? So,
I mean,
yeah.
Just talking to people like you who've had a huge background, Larry Houston with all the stuff he's worked on, just amazing all the projects. When you put them all together, it's like, this is insane that all these things came about from all these people's minds, and all these people had a hands in it, the editors, directors, art department, and things like that, which actually brings us to art department, because one of the ones you worked on, X-Men Evolution, which a lot of people, I know I don't want to blaspheme X-Men the Animated Series, but when you talk about, that's usually the online debate, is a lot of people think X-Men Evolution was the superior franchise. I mean, would you, having worked on it, I'm sure you probably agree, but what are your thoughts on the debate?
To me, there is no debate. It's in the proof. Is in the watching. It was and still is the best animated X-Men show out there. Hmm. I'm not a fan of the original X-Men show.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
We won't tell Larry.
Ah, you know, Larry knows. But, and if he doesn't, it'd be good for him to learn. I shy from no man. But I mean, the thing about Evolution that was smart, why it was a better show, was that, and this is a theory I have of, it wasn't afraid to take their source material and then grow it into its own self. So that you didn't have to sit there and read the comic book and watch the show. You learned who these characters were by watching the show.
Yeah.
And it took you down avenues and places that the comic books would maybe hint at, or maybe even ignore. But these guys blew out and explored. And it was a beautiful show. Design-wise, execution, just well done.
And you got to play in both sandbox for Marvel and DC, Legion of Superheroes, for example.
Oh.
You got to kind of be in both worlds.
Yeah.
I know, I don't want to assume that you had, because of the way things ended with DC Comics, that you have a bad relationship with DC Comics. But do you have, if like someone came to you and said, you're only be able to work in one of these two sandboxes, Marvel or DC, would you have a preference?
Well, it's funny you should say it. Last year, I did the cover to the 80th anniversary Aquaman. And they were one of seven artists asked to do that. Or eight artists, each representing a decade. I got to do a decade of the guys who I enjoyed, which was a cross between Jim Aparo and Dick Hardy. And I was just immensely proud to have been asked that. It's probably the best cover I've ever done. Got to work with Kevin Nolan.
Oh, nice.
Inker of Inkers, who actually turned down all the work to do it, which I was very proud of.
Wow.
And also gifted me the actual cover when we were done.
That's nice.
So, to answer your question, I was a DC man since I was age four.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably be a DC man until I die, even though I don't read the books now. I don't even agree with some of the directions. Not because of the wokeness as much as you outgrow things. And what I love about the old stuff was the wild and craziness of it.
Yeah.
That I miss. I miss that there was elsewhere planets. I miss that, you know, there was Earth 1 through 12 or 26 or how many you want to put.
Right.
And they're bringing them back. But to me, you outgrow things. They don't have the same flavor. But it's funny, asked to draw that Aquaman, I was right back to being a rookie again.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the hell out of it. So, to answer your question, I'm a DC guy.
Yeah.
When I worked on Legion of Superheroes, of the animated shows, I had more fun on that than X-Men.
Really?
I won't even go into you about my X-Men stuff.
Right.
Just to say that, oh yeah, I even got to do my favorite of the Legions was I got to do the origin story for Karate Kid.
Oh, cool.
The irony is that my first DC major series that I did coming in was A Brave and the Bold introducing Batman and Karate Kid.
Oh, neat. Okay.
So it was like full circle going back and drawing Karate Kid again. Huh. And then I got to work on Brave and the Bold. So, you know, kind of like, you know, everywhere right. I look up, it's like, you know, DC isn't done with me. The fact that they give me residuals for the things I've done, I'm not done with them.
Yeah.
I mean, even if I may not get another cover, I'm still, that's my alma mater.
And the other projects, Batman, Brave and the Bold, you mentioned. Yeah. Avengers, Earth's Mightiest, which I think is much better than Avengers Assemble, because it was more true to the comic books, in my opinion.
I bow to you. I agree. I totally agree. I got to do, I only remember one scene that I enjoyed, and I enjoyed it because it was not the typical superhero scene. It was the Avengers playing poker.
The Ben Grimm over, if I'm not
Ben
mistaken.
Ben Grimm
yes.
was playing against Captain America and Black Panther.
That's right.
And all these little nuances that I enjoyed doing, and then it got broke up by the Hulk. And I watched it once recently, and the little nuances I wanted to do were gone, but it still was the essence of the scene. And that's probably the best stuff I can remember about it. Although, again, I have friends worked on it. It was a great show. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it a lot. I know what they went through. See, that's the tough part. You work on these shows long enough, there's a fanboy that can enjoy it, and then there's a professional that
yeah.
knows every nook and cranny of how hard it was to do that show. Not an easy show.
Absolutely not. And if people want to keep up with you, website, social media handles, online stuff at all?
Yes, or? I'm all, at least I like to think I'm all over social media.
Okay.
I have a pretty active Facebook page and okay. Instagram page. I'm just now starting on Twitter, where I kind of hop in and out and mess around with people. My feelings about Twitter is it should stay fun. I keep all of the politics. I keep all of the crap knocking
Same.
People.
Same.
I did get onto the anti-AI thing. I wouldn't say anti. I just did not like how it was used in the use against a famous artist who just passed. But other than that, I try to keep it fun. I try to keep it inspirational because we got enough crap in our lives. So you can find me on all three of those, specifically on Facebook and Instagram.
And is it just at Chuck Patton, or is there underscores in there or anything? Or?
No underscore. Actually, I have my little
phone. I see the Facebook, facebook.com/ChuckPattonArt.
Yeah.
So is it probably Chuck Patton Art, too, on Instagram as well?
Yes. Yes, okay. It's Chuck Patton Art on Instagram. I try to keep it straight so that you can find me.
It's the same across the board. That's easiest for everybody.
If I put in, fat old boring guy. .com. I mean, there's too many guys like that.
Obviously not boring, because like I said, we'd probably talk for another hour, but I promise I'd only keep you for about 10 to 12 minutes.
So. I'm giving you too much. I tend to go off. So.
No, that's fair. And like I said, if you ever decide you want to talk more, we got the live radio show on Sundays.
Whenever
if
you want to do so, it, you let me know.
Perfect. Chuck Patton, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I love it.
We'll definitely have to have him back on. That was a great interview. I'm so glad I found that audio. My goodness. I mentioned earlier that it was on the recorder. I knew it was there, but I thought I'd lost it, and I was going through files, and lo and behold, there it is, a file that says Chuck Patton, unedited. So I went ahead and found it. Glad I did. That's going to do it. Another show in the books next Sunday, Christmas Eve. I have a new show, but it is pre-recorded. I will not be live, nor will I be live on New Year's Eve. We've got interviews with Roy Thomas, Fabian Nicieza, Nick Zano, and Shelley Hennig coming up. New show Obliterated on Netflix. Thank you, as always, for joining me.
It's not in the way you watch a zombie.
As good as it does. There he is.
It's not in the way you watch the Flash.
That'll do it. Happy holidays to you all. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Hanukkah, whatever you're celebrating. And Happy New Year. We'll be live again in 2024. Until then, my friends.
It's not in the way you look when you make Game of Thrones references. That's a show. This is Geek to Me Radio. That's a show.
Hey kids, are your parents about to buy you a shiny new toy from Amazon?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Well, don't be selfish. Share some of that money with us. Before going on Amazon, make sure to type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser. It will look just like Amazon.com, except it'll say referral Geek to Me Radio up top. And then when you check out, a tiny percentage will go to support the show without costing you 1 cent more. So before your parents get you that gizmo, gadget, or widget, make sure they type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser.
bit.ly/geektome, bit.ly/geektome.